Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Power Hour. Yes, sir. Here we are. This is Power Hour 223. So we did 222 last week. And two things. First is, I may or may not be live. I recorded this. This is, if you're listening to this part, this is a recording, but it was done on Tuesday before the show. And I wanted to have it in the bag because we're going to be at the AOPA fly-in in Buckeye, Arizona. And I'll have a chance to test the internet connection on Friday with a good bunch of people, you know, hanging around to see what the connection is like. But I thought I would make the video here just in case. So I would like to still try to perform it live or to at least be available to comment, especially in the second hour. I think that would be something to do. But anyway, so if it sounds like a recording, then it probably is. But Nick will be able to moderate by putting in links for everything. So if you're waiting for Wings credit for this particular segment, that's going to be near the end of the show. He will put in links throughout the show in the chat. And the chat will have links for what I'm talking about, links for free stuff, links for whatever it is that's relevant, right? And then to get Wings credit, you must click on the link that's going to be in the chat later on. It's the only way we give you Wings credit, because we can't do it if you just put your name in the chat saying Wings credit. Because typically we have about 200 or more people request Wings credit, and you can imagine how copy-paste that would be, how long that would take. So we have you go through the other way. All right, well, the format of the show today is going to be... Well, the format of the day, I should say. This is a three-hour show now. This is kind of long, kind of fun, right? Give you something to do, and especially when it's really bad. I think some of you are either just had or having kind of bad weather. So Phoenix, I think, is going to be okay. I'm not there yet, but I am, but I'm not. You know what I mean? We're all sitting around here. So, and by the way, if you want to visit us, we are at the AOPA fly-in in Buckeye, Arizona, and we're inside the exhibit hall. You'll find us. We're logoed out. I got a sign in there and a bunch of monitors and all that sort of thing going on. So you'll find us in there. So if you're in the Phoenix area and you want to learn about flight training, or in particular, we're looking for a training partner in Phoenix. That means a flight school that has at least two airplanes of the same kind and some instructors to help do the flight portion of CFI Bootcamp. We'll still do the ground, but we're looking for that. So anyway, that's what I'm on mission to do there, or here, whatever. I guess it'd be here if I'm here. So anyway, there's that. Then the second hour of the show is going to be a moderated open mic. So because we generally have between 200 and 500 people or so in the room, the second hour goes to open mic, but I can't open everybody's mic because it gets a bit noisy. There's some people who don't really know how to unmute themselves, mute themselves, that kind of thing. But what I do is I go through all the chats then. So I'm hoping I'll be able to do that. If not, I think Nicholas can probably assign someone in the room as a co-host, and that person can then answer those questions. If there's still lingering ones, then he can just send them to me via some method, and I can get back to whoever it is and do it maybe at the next show or something like that, something like that. So then we have the third hour. So the third hour, and then, by the way, if there's open time, I will open up the mics at the end of that second hour, but usually there isn't, but in the third hour, there will be. So the third hour, we will either have a guest speaker from an organization that we like the CFI Study Group from Facebook. If you don't belong to that, join. There's a link at the end of this presentation for that. And anyway, that would that's a likely thing. If it's not, we're going to just open the thing up with open mic, and or we could play the podcast from February. We could do that. So there's many things we can do. So this is the Bootcamp Plus Network, and you are listening to the first hour, which is the Power Hour. And we've done these for almost 5 years. In June of we started June 2000. We've done 220. Three of them now. This would be 223. And they're available in outline form. So you can get the outlines for them at cfibootcamp.com. If you go to the top left, there's a thing there that says Power Hours. And if you click that, you can download these outlines that I'm speaking from. And so actually in the chat, you can get today's outline. You also get a follow-up email in case you forgot or couldn't attend, but registered, that will also give you this outline, which they're usually good outlines with very good information in them. And if there are any resources, there'll be links in there as well. Okay. So there's that. Now, if you want to see all the 222 previous Power Hours. The only way you can do that is through our membership site. And our membership site is at cfibootcamp.com. And if you go to the top, you'll see resources. You'll see Bootcamp Plus, and you can opt in. There's a free version. It gives you about 10 of the Power Hours. Then there's some other tiers in there. But the second tier, the middle tier, will give you pretty much everything. And it's a monthly subscription. And you can quit anytime you want. So there's 5 weeks of 8 hours a day of content in there for you. Almost 222 hours of content. So if you missed something, and we've done so many of these. We had guest speakers from everywhere. We've had ForeFlight on. We've had Gary Reeves, guy in the pink shirt, knows all about IFR and automation. We've had AOPA's legal services. We had SAFE on. We've had panels. And then we've had deep dives into things like gates on pylons, the mathematics behind it, why the point pivots, what happens when you're not on pivotal altitude, not just the fact the pylon goes somewhere, why it goes somewhere. So a lot of the whys in there, marketing videos, there's so many things. But anyway, have a look at that and see if that's something you'd like, okay? So that's where that's at. And Nick, again, will put in the chat, there will be a link for that, okay? So you can go and take a look at that. And there's also a free trial, just so you know. All right, well, that's enough of that. So let's move on with this. So this is what's on for today. We said the Power Hour first hour is wings credit. You have to be in the chat to do it. The second hour is a moderated open mic. If I get through all the chats, or whoever's going to moderate gets to the chats, then we'll open up the mics. If not, then we'll push it into the third hour where you always get a chance to talk. You always get a chance to ask questions. We'll leave the room open until almost there's no questions. Now, if there's conversations going on, we have to cut those off. But if there are specific questions that didn't get answered, we can address those in the third hour. And the third hour will be open mic or the CFI study group, okay? I don't know because I don't have confirmation yet, but soon. Maybe by tomorrow or today, I don't know, something like that. So we're going to talk about in the regulations endorsement section. So it's going to be how to legally and how to correctly and legally conduct an IPC, an instrument proficiency check. And there's a lot of stuff I have to say about this, as you can imagine. And some things to me just aren't clear enough. And I'm going to bring those points out to you. So when you do one of these, you can take the safest route so you can be sure that your IPC is counting for an IPC and there will be no question about it, okay? So there's more to this story than the regulation. Speaking of that, this is the regulation 61.57 Delta and Echo. So Delta describes how to stay instrument current. You know, within the previous 6 months, you have to conduct 6 instrument approaches, track navigation facilities, courses, and then did holding procedures. And if you go past 6 months, then you have another 6 months to get current. That's where the IPC comes in at Echo. It says, hey, if you go past another 6 months, past your 6 months of not hitting the mark of 6 approaches, you'll have another 6 months to do it with a safety pilot or a CFII or whatever. But after that, you have to pass an instrument proficiency check, an IPC. And that clearly defined in the regulations, if we're looking for it, 61.57 Delta and Echo. Now, if you're a CFI, the endorsement you'll give when it's completed will be an AC61-65 Hotel. That is not Hotel Juliet, 6165 Juliet. You can see that thing, hotel model, been around for a long time, and they just updated the other one because they changed some of the CFI regulations. So get a chance to do that. You can go to FAA.gov, or it's actually easier to just go to Google and put in AC space 61-65 Juliet, and it'll take you right there. And you'll have your own copy, and you'll be looking for UCFIs, CFIIs, you'll be looking for additional endorsements somewhere around the A65 and higher numbers. I think it's around A67, A68 in this region, okay? So when you're looking for it, it's not in the beginning sections, not near the instrument rating stuff, okay? All right, and we're going to go through the whole shmia here today, okay? So let's move on with it. So again, after a year, we've got to have an IPC, and that before you can be PIC of an airplane or act as PIC under IFR. So 61.57 Delta sets the stage for the currency recency of experience requirements. Echo sets the stage for the IPC. Okay. So now, if you're within the year, you can get your currency back by using a safety pilot appropriately rated in the airplane. And there's some discussion on this, by the way. If you go to CFI Study Group, on Facebook, you'll find questions that were posed, and you'll see legal interpretations about the qualifications of the safety pilot. So in general, they don't need a medical, but they have to be rated to be PSC in the airplane, so with category and class. And then they could be second command. So, and because you're under the hood, if you were the one trying to get current or get recent, you have to have a safety pilot because you have to be able to see outside. Now their operation requires more than one crew member. If both pilots, say everybody's current and able to act as PIC of that airplane, whatever that airplane is, then you both can log simultaneous PIC. And there's another legal interpretation out there floating around. It's in our CFII Essentials course and CFII course. But basically, it's that, yes, you can log the time because the operation requires more than one crew member, but the cross-country time can only be logged by one pilot, because as soon as the hood comes off, there's no requirement to have another pilot. So both people can't log simultaneous cross-country time, but they can log PSC time. And we can talk about some other ways to work around, not around that, but to work with that as we go through. Maybe in a separate segment, we're going to have a segment on regulations, the most commonly misunderstood regulations, and we'll clear all that kind of stuff up in one of the power hours coming up pretty soon. Okay, let's move on here. The IPC is, the mandated tasks are in the instrument rating airplane ACS, which I'm going to show you. So the instrument rating has for airplane has an ACS now, and the requirements for the IPC are located in the appendix, right? And it's a table back there, and I want to show it to you here in a second. By the way, this regulation, which is referred to in the instrument proficiency check 61.57 ECHO, that regulation refers you to 61.14, which is new. That came out last year in December, and it makes all the ACSs and PTSs incorporated by reference into the Federal Aviation Regulations, which means that all those documents were incorporated by their number into the regulations. So they are part of the FAR. That's why we can use them. Okay, so anyway, that's what that says. But here's a look at the ACS. This is the title of it. This is the front cover of it. This is the recent one. It was November of 2024 is when all these were released, right? This is the current AC is list of this printing. Now, you can go to FAA.gov anytime and check and see which ACS is current, right? So there may be a Delta version by the time you hear this in the or Echo or whatever it be in the future. If this was long ago, okay? So let's move on. Here's what the table looks like in Appendix 1. And so this is what it says. And it goes to the required areas of operation here, and then the number of tasks that are required here. And don't worry, I've summarized this for you in this presentation. You get a copy of this. It's in PDF form. So you don't need to worry about taking screenshots on it, or you don't need to worry about recording it or doing anything like that. So you have a full-on copy of this thing. And I noted some places where I thought it was important for us to know something. Okay, so this is that, and it says that you have to do these as a minimum, and that whoever is giving this, and notice it used the word evaluators. So we're going to get to that. That's a very important word, because before, a flight instructor was a flight instructor, and evaluators were either ASIs or DPEs, and so, some extent some other people, but in general, that was how it was. Now, evaluators include flight instructors that are giving IPCs. How you like that? You're called an evaluator. To me, that changes things significantly in the way that we read the ACS. If it just says you're a flight instructor, responsibility is what you have to do, I think you look through that, that's fine. But when it says evaluator, unless it specifically says the evaluator shall do this for a practical test, which you're not administering a practical test, you're administering an IPC. But where it doesn't say those words, where it just says evaluator, I think you have to do all those things. So we're going to get to that, all right? I'm going to go through each of these line items with you. At the very end of this lesson, I've got a full worked up IPC that I can give in the Bay Area, San Francisco. I'm sure you're going to like that. You go, oh, fine. I got a lot of people want that. Can I get a copy of that? It's at the end. Don't worry. You have it. It will ring the bell for it all of it. So, that's fine. So, but for the rest of you, not in the Bay Area, you're going to have to do it yourself. And there's a few things that will rub you the wrong way. so to speak, right? Or if you won't say that, it'll catch you out. That's a really good English phrase. It'll catch you out, meaning if you didn't know what I'm about to tell you over the next this next 20 minutes or 30 minutes or so, you will definitely have not given, probably not given, a IPC that meets the requirements. Ooh, that's bad, right? Now, that's not everybody, but that's a lot of people. So in our CFII class, which is a three-day course, by the way, it's remote or in-person, and it's usually on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of a particular month. Anyway, in that class, we one of the homework assignments is to create an IPC for your area. So what we do is we take that homework, that IPC, the next day, and we go through it and see if it rings the bell. After we've lectured it, of course, and so make sure you know, we won't set you up to give you a purposely bad IPC in your area. But once I've lectured it, I need to see that you can apply everything. So I just have you look up one, do one based upon where you live. And then it's good for you when you go back there, right? So you've got something to take home with you. Okay. Let's move on here. So you can see these. And so area of operations occur or appear in the ACS. And they look like this. Area of operation one. And this is pre-flight operation, and these are the tasks, right, with under that. Then these will, we go to the meat of the matter, like what's in there, that they would have what this means, pilot qualifications, what needs to be knowledge areas, what you have to have in knowledge, what you need in risk management, what you have to have in skill. So they're always in the ACS for every area of operation, every task, there is an objective, the resources for that, where those resources come from, and then there's the knowledge elements, however many those are, things you have to know, risk elements, things you have to consider, and then there is the skills. Now, in a practical test, check right, the evaluator, the DPE or ASI, has to pick one knowledge area and one risk management area and all the skills. So, but you as a CFI have to teach all of them, okay? But on an IPC, we're going to see, if you look here, if I go back to a slide just before, this is Area of Operation 1 and 2. You can see the general nature of these questions or these things. Pilot qualifications, weather, cross-country flight planning, aircraft systems related to IFR, instruments, navigation, flight deck check. If we go back to what's required, you'll see none of these tasks are required. No task in Area of Operation 1 or 2 is required. It starts off with 3, and it's just task B. And I've got these noted as we go through, so you'll see. So, for example, here is Air of Operation 3, and the only thing that's absolutely required is holding procedures. It doesn't say what you have to do, but it says you have to demonstrate holding. And if you look into that task, you'll see the definition of what they want you to know, risk manage, and do. Right? So, knowledge, risk management, skills. And then in Air of Operation 4, flight by reference to instruments, we have to do, as a minimum, recovery from unusual flight attitudes. That's required. In Air of Operation 5, it's intercepting and tracking navigational systems and DME arcs. And there's a note in the ACS, and all the notes apply to you for giving an IPC because you're using it as a basis document. It says that if your airplane doesn't have DME, then you don't have to do that on the practical test, and you will not use GPS as a substitute for it. So it's got to be a real published DME arc. You can't just make one up. So that's in there. Now, in training, you can do whatever you want. But for the IPC, their requirement is to only do DMA arc if it's published, okay? Just so you know. Moving on, we have to do all of Area of Operation 6, which is instrument approach procedures. And there's a lot of detail which we need to go into here. Non-precision approach, precision approach, missed approach, circling approach, and landing. So if I, first question I might ask someone who's going to give an IPC is, how many instrument approaches do you have to do? And it's not clear from here. And if you delve into the Air of Operation 6A, non-precision approach, it won't be clear to you that you need to do at least two. It won't be, just looking at that matter. But when you go to the appendix, then you'll know. So how do we do that? Well, you're going to see in just a second. So precision approach, you just have to do one. So as a minimum, you're going to have to do three approaches as part of any IPC. Okay? So we'll look at that. And certification. Then there's a missed approach that's required, a circling approach, and then landing from an instrument approach. And then in Area of Operation 7, emergency operations, the only thing we really have to do is D, unless you have a multi-engine airplane, in which case there will be task B and C. But if you're using a single-engine airplane, then it will only be task delta D, approach with loss of primary flight indicators. So in a six-pack, that's going to be loss of the attitude indicator, heading indicator. And in the G1000, it's going to be what Garmin recommends, unfortunately, I'd say, is to use reversionary mode. Push the red button and everything slides over to the right. That's a loss to me. That's not a loss of primary flight instruments. That's a loss of a display. But that's what they say to do. They say not to pull circuit breakers because and I agree with that. Circuit breakers are not switches. They were never designed to be a switch or they would be different. They would be designed differently. Circuit breakers, if you keep turning them on and off, there's only so many times you're going to be able to do that before they will fail. So there's that. So a switch, a light switch, or a switch that's in your airplane, is for like the landing light, is built to be a switch. And you can turn it on a million times, and it will eventually will fail, but it's going to take a lot of turn on and turn off because it's designed that way. Not so for a circuit breaker. So don't pull those. The other thing is on the Cessnas, the attitude heading reference system and AHAR system and the ADC system are on the same circuit breaker. So when you kill that, you kill them both. It's not a very realistic failure and also kills a transponder. So you've got some things to worry about, okay? And then it takes a while to get that stuff back up and running if you made a mistake, you know? So anyway, don't pull the circuit breakers. The better place to do all that is in the flight training device. And if you have one at your school or you can get something from maybe X-Plane or something where you can actually simulate the real failure, like an AHAR failure, ADC failure, I would do that in a New York minute, right? Especially if you can use a flight training devices, as long as they're authorized by the letter of authority, letter of authorization, LOA. If it says you can do an IPC in one, then you can do an IPC in one, except for circling approaches, usually, unless you have the wraparound visuals, then they let you do that. But in general, you can use the simulator, or we call them sims, but for training by AATDs, for almost everything in the IPC. And I would definitely use it for the AHARS failures, those kind of things. I also would use it if I had a six-pack. I would use it to fail the vacuum system because the only thing I can do in the airplane is cover them, and you already know they're failed. But part of the insidiousness of that is detecting that it's failed because you chase it for a while until you figure out something's wrong, and by then, who knows what attitude the airplane is really in. So when you do that in the simulator, you can do it. I also put the freezing level fairly low in the training device with clouds. That's something I can't do in the airplane. And then I see, and what will happen is the student will, the applicant learner, the whatever we want to call them, pilot, will fly into freezing conditions because they're not being trained to check the outside air temperature before they enter any cloud, no matter what temperatures you check the OAT. And when you go in it, then they'd not aware that it's freezing. And what happens is the pitot then starts to ice over slowly, which means the airspeed indicator is going to start going towards zero, right? But it's going to do that slowly. So what does the student learner do? They push in power because they think, oh, I don't have enough power. And then they have it all the way in at some point, and the airspeed's still slowing low, and they can't showing low, and they can't figure out why. Then you turn the pitot heat on, and you can see the airspeed restored. It's really high now, and you're like, whew, okay. You could have exceeded a flap limitation, plus flaps with icing, all sorts of bad. So anyway, you can get rid of some of the ugly by doing that. You can also train out the instinct to use an autopilot in icing conditions, which you cannot do, or change with flap, or with certain conditions where you can't use the autopilot, which is in the limitations or in the supplement section of the POH for your airplane. All right, well, anyway, let's move on past that. It's kind of too much on that. And finally, the Air Operation 8 is the checking instruments and equipment. So the FAA defines the CFII as an evaluator when conducting an IPC. So an evaluator includes the following. It includes an ASI, which inspector works at the FISDO, pilot examiner, then a training center evaluator, a chief pilot, assistant chief, check instructor of a pilot school holding examining authority, or an instrument flight instructor. And it says CFII, conducting an instrument proficiency check. So here it lets us use this word evaluator. It's holding us to that, which is really going to be important here in a second, because then the way I read things and the way the FAA is reading things are a little bit different. So when I read the word evaluator and it's not included in a practical test, when they're not using it with the term practical test, then I think we're bound by everything that's around that. So I'm going to show you in a second what I mean by it. So there's a lot that has to be done. This is in the appendix. Now, this is up for you to read. I don't usually let you read things, right? And if I do, because you're reading it now, right? The way we do PowerPoints usually is not this way. But because it's an online lecture, and I don't have, I don't want to take so much time to make this lesson. If I was going to use it in our CFII class, I probably would spend time to break these things out individually. But one thing you never do is this. Don't ever put this much material up on a slide. If you need that, that goes in your speaker notes, right? So what I should have put here is just like three bullets. But I want to go through it with you. So I've given you kind of enough time. You probably didn't hear anything I said because you're reading all that. So let me tell you what it says. I'm going to go back to here. Now, you can read that because you already read that, right? So it defines what a non-precision approach is. And it says that you can use, you cannot use approved vertical guidance. But if the airplane has, if it has vertical guidance that's not approved, so it's not a real glide slope, but it's not certified, if it's just an advisory one, like LNAV plus V, that one, if you remember that one, the plus V, it's not, that's not an FAA instrument approach. That's a Garmin thing telling you that this is a plain vanilla GPS approach and it just happens to have an advisory glide slope on it. You can use that. But it goes on to say one approach has to be done without the use of radar vectors. Without the use of radar vectors. So if you're doing all vectored approaches, you're not doing an IPC. You still have things to do, right? The next thing is it has to involve a procedure turn, right? So, or a TAA, which is a GPS thing. I can explain to you what that is later. And then the other thing, one has to be done without the use of an autopilot. And the last thing is one has to be conducted using the backup instruments, we'll call them. Okay, and now we look and see what it really says so we can delve in there. So I'm going to go through it with you. Again, please try not to read it. It says, a non-precision approach is a standard instrument approach procedure to a published minimum descent altitude. It's got to have an MDA without approved vertical guidance. The applicant may use navigation systems that display advisory vertical guidance during non-precision operations if available. That's, that tells you you can do it. The evaluator, that's you, evaluator, could then save for a practical test, must select, and the applicant must accomplish at least two different non-precision approaches in simulated or actual IMC conditions. At least one procedure must include a course reversal. That's the procedure turn or holding in lieu of a procedure turn, or unless you're doing a TAA, this thing. So GPS, a 90-degree arrival from various, well, not quite 90 degrees, but within 90 degrees. We'll talk about that later. The applicant must accomplish at least one procedure from initial approach fix without the use of an autopilot, without the use of radar vectors. During this task, you can use the a yaw damper or flight director. That's okay. And last thing is the applicant must fly one procedure with reference to backup or partial panel instrumentation. So that's that. And the evaluator has discretion to have the applicant perform a landing or a missed approach at the completion of each approach. And we're going to see how to string all that together in a second, see where the rough spots are on the road here, which you're going to get to. So now they've defined what a precision approach is, and this is a good thing. So in the last PTS, or ACS, I should say, they said that you could substitute an LPV for ILS as long as the DA was not higher than 300 feet. Now, they've completely removed that statement, and it's a lot better. So let me explain. I'm going to read it to you. I'm sure you're reading it now, and I'm going to read it so you get there's no 300 feet in here anymore. And it defines in words what a precision approach is. It doesn't say it's a substitute. It says it is one. So let's look at it. The applicant must accomplish a precision approach to the decision altitude using aircraft navigation equipment for centerline and vertical guidance. That means it can't be a PAR approach. It's got ASR. It's got to be something with navigation. In simulated or actual meteorological conditions, and here, a precision approach is a standard instrument approach procedure to a published decision altitude using approved vertical guidance. So that's now that 300 foot's gone. So it could be an ILS that has a DA of 800 feet above the ground. It doesn't specify here, right? The evaluator has discretion to have that applicant perform a landing or missed approach at the completion of each of these. So now we have these definitions. Again, these are in the appendix of the Instrument Rating Airplane ACS. Now let's look at the elephant in the room. We're going to take a break here in about 3 minutes, just so you know. So if I'm live, I'm going to go through the room a little bit and see what kind of questions we got going on. I'll give you an update on what we're doing at CFI Bootcamp, that kind of thing. And maybe I can have a little view of the show and see what's going on in there. We'll see. I'm going to have to play that as it comes. So anyway, look at this. Circling approach. This is the gotcha, the biggest gotcha in administering an IPC because it's a required task. Got to do it. Can't do it in the sim, right? So let's take a look. Here's the section in the skills section. Visually maneuver to a base or downwind leg appropriate for the landing runway and environmental conditions. So that is the big gotcha. So we need to talk about that because it seems to me these words, you have to visually maneuver the airplane to either the base or the downwind leg. Now, that may be tricky. So you can't call a circling approach done just because it looks like you could circle. You actually have to take it to the base or downwind leg. What about this case? And then we're going to take a break right after this. What about the case where we have an instrument approach that comes into a runway on the wrong side of the traffic pattern? So, like example, there's an approach at Tracy Airport in California, TCY, KTCY. And you'll notice that it says circling is not authorized to the south of a particular runway, not south of the runway, right? Yet the traffic pattern's over there. So that's where it's left-hand traffic for runway 31. I believe it's 31 there. So when you come the other way and you have to circle using right traffic because you would be circling to avoid that side, you can't do that because you are now flying contrary to the direction of turns in the traffic pattern in VFR conditions. And just because you want to do instrument approaches doesn't give you the grace to do it. And there is a legal interpretation on that, which I'm going to show you. And the legal interpretation, we'll break it down here in just a second. So you've got a quagmire here of something because you've got to be able to circle. Now, I've got a solution for a single runway airport where the conditions are favoring the same runway that you're approaching, so you can't really circle to the other runway because the wind's not favoring. I do have a solution to that. I'll show you in a second. This is the legal interpretation. It's the Daniel Murray one for this 2009. And again, a lot of reading, but basically it's asking this question. It's asking the question of if the traffic pattern is VFR and there are people making left turns, can I go ahead and make right turns because I need to conduct a circling approach? And the answer is no, you cannot. You can if it's IFR, and you can if ATC authorizes it. But it says ATC has no requirement to do so. So I've never tested this. I've never asked ATC at a non-towered airport. I mean, you could do it at a towered airport, I suppose, right? But a non-towered airport, if you got authorization to make right traffic, to circle runway 26, if they authorize it, you could do it. But that's what this letter says. You can take a look at it. You can see, you can go Google it. You'll find it. And this is basically it. And here's the section. So it's particularly talking about Class G, which is Tracy's Class G, Class E to a while. And it goes on, it says that all turns have to be made to the other way. It says, however, right-hand turns under these, however, the regulation does not obligate ATC to grant such a request. So you get this in this pickle, right, trying to do a circling approach in VFR conditions, where then you kind of have to, I don't know how, it's really difficult. You have to overfly the airport at your MDA, which may be well below pattern altitude. But good news is pattern altitudes aren't regulated. They're just suggested. But the direction of turns are. And then get in there with the rest of that traffic. Yeah. So anyway, a way you can do it, I was going to tell you. So you can look up KPAO, Papa Alpha Oscar, PAO, KPAO, it's Palo Alto Airport. Papa Alpha Oscar, and that's in California. And you'll see it has one runway and one approach. There's the RNAV runway 31, and the fair weather runway is 31. So if it's fair weather, you're going to be using it. And it's a busy airport. So how are you going to get the circle in? Because you can't go to 13 because the wind is not going to favor it. So what you can do is something in the AIM, you'll find this, called an overhead break. So you'll ask the tower to break over the numbers, or wherever it's convenient, but break over the numbers and enter right traffic for 31. So basically, you'll take the approach to minimums. You'll come over the numbers, and if they approve it, they'll say break right over the numbers. You'll break right. That means you'll turn right and join the traffic pattern and basically do a 360, come back around and land. So that's how you can get it in. You could also do that at a non-towered airport, right? You could do that. Okay, so that's the idea. Okay, here you go. If you've been waiting for my latest product, CFI Bootcamp, it's the ACS Audio Guide, Study Guide. And basically, I took the ACS for a flight instructor. I took every single area of operation and task that's in the ground portion. And I went through all the knowledge nuggets there, the knowledge elements, and all the risk management. And I talked about, in audio, what you should know about those things. And then I produced a, produced a PDF that's companion to that. And this is both audio and video. So if you can watch it video-wise, you'll be able to see everything I'm talking about. If not, you can still listen to it in your car. You can take it with you somewhere. And then when you get a chance, you can scroll through the PDF later in case you couldn't visualize what I was saying. But I went through everything there. So I've narrated all of that. So that's finished. That task is finished, the narration, which is 24 different tasks I had to narrate. And that took a long time. Anyway, now they have to be edited. So I'm anticipating this will take a month to a month and a half to wrap up. So if you go to our the link now in the chat that Nick is going to put in there for you, there's going to be a link to the PTS version of this. Remember, there was a PTS for flight instructor, and then I did all this work, and then not a month later, the ACS was dropped, and so I couldn't really use that as a So what I did was, we're going to give that to you for free. That whole thing, there's like, I think there's 8 or 9 hours of audio in there. And it covers a lot of the same material. Believe me, a lot of the same material. And then it'll also let me know that you might, if that you're interested in the real other, not the real, the other course that's aligned exactly to the ACS when that comes out. So we're going to make a special offer to those people. Okay. And probably the Power Hour people, because we always give them our best deal. So that's what I'm working on. And that's been a grind to get done. Let's just say that, but it's finished now. Okay, and then the online course has been updated, as I think most of you know now. So it's aligned to the ACS as well. So if you're thinking about becoming a flight instructor, that's something you want to do at CFIbootcamp.com. There'll be a link to that, the online course, in the chat. He doesn't know that, but so he'll get it there, I'm sure. And that will be a way to get our online course, which is prerequisite. You could use that and go to a flight instructor and say, let's just fill in the blanks of, all right, this is what I know, this is what I went through, here's what I didn't do well at, here's what I did do well at. Then go to your CFI and complete the teaching part of it. Let's talk about how to, the teaching theory was there, but I couldn't, in an online course, I can't evaluate your teaching. Your instructor has to do that. And do the flight side and then call it done. Or you could come to one of our 7-day put it all together class. We call them immersion classes. But you have to take the online course from us before you can come to an immersion class, because I'm letting that do all the heavy lifting in terms of all the technical and all of the lecture, right? That's all lecture based. And then there's a workbook in there, assessments. And then when you come to the 7-day class, we put it together. So we work with realistic scenarios, unrealistic scenarios for endorsements, regulations. We work with airspace. We work with teaching, a lot of teaching practice, teaching from our lesson plans, creating one on your own or more. Interacting with the class, getting critiques from 3 different instructors, 2 or 3 different instructors usually on that. And then just the hard stuff, right? We go through the FOI in a different way, in a sort of a more practical way, so that we're using information on the online course. And that's why our program works so well, because you will have 42 hours. The online course is about 40 hours, something like that. Then you have 42 hours in-person immersion class. That's 80-some hours. Right, then you have about 10 hours. You've almost got 100 hours of instruction before you go see the DPE. And so that's why. And then you only need to spend 2 weeks with us. You do your online work ahead of time, then you come to the class. So that's that. Okay, I'll go through some other stuff near the end, but I wanted to do that. I don't know how the show's going here at Buckeye. I'm not there, but I am, right? But right now I am. So we'll see. Alex is going to, Pena, who's in the house, is going to take over on Sunday, because I got to get back to do a CFI class on Monday in Miami. So he'll be manning the booth, so to speak. We're, again, looking for a training partner there. Someone, flight school in the Phoenix area, who has at least 2 airplanes that are the same or very close to the same, who can do the flight side of this, because we contract with other flight schools to usually do the flight side. We show them what we want done, and then they do it, because we don't want to have airplanes. So we just basically run like that. So, but again, half of our class, and we'll go back to the presentation, or half our class will fly somewhere else. They'll fly with, because, and the reason for it is typically they feel that they've got home field advantage where they're from. So maybe they did a check ride with this DPE, same DPE for three or four of them before. And so they know each other. They feel like, okay, I know I can be successful. I'll just do it back home. Also cuts down on expense. You don't have to travel. So a lot of people will do that. Half the class will go home and finish it there. And the other half of the class will do it with us. So it just depends. So that's kind of how it looks. Let's get back into this, okay? Let's talk about FAA guidance. They do have an AC. It's 61.98 ECHO. And I have asked for clarification on using it. I asked the person, people, the division who wrote that. Because I just don't... it's not ringing the bell for me, okay? I'm going to show you where I think it falls flat. Now, if you use it... And again, if you use it, I don't think it's going to tell you to do all those things we talked about in the one has to be a non-vectored approach, one has to be this, one has to be that. I don't think that's in there, right? And so I just wonder. But it is guidance from them, and it's current guidance. So I've asked for clarification on that. So hopefully I'll get that. Here's the AC. It's 6198 ECHO. And this is the knowledge portion. There's a knowledge portion. Was there any knowledge that was required on the IPC? Aerial Operation 1 and 2 were not required. So I don't know why they're asking it unless it's just advisory in nature. Like, oh, it'd be a good thing to do. Why not just do it? That would be different. I think the FAA should be clear when something is required and something's just, we would like you to do it. I think that it shouldn't just be all lumped in there together, but that's that. This is a plan of action, and you'll see that there's air of operation right from here. This is what they want you to do. So there's going to be discussion about cross-country plan. There's going to be a discussion about all this on the ground. And that's not in the regulation. That's not in the ACS currently. But it is in this AC. So anyway, the back of this AC is where this appendix is. It's a sample flight instructor IPC checklist. And they plan a lot in there. I didn't reproduce the whole thing, but just to let you know that it's there. So you can go grab that AC. Again, here's the AC. 61-98 ECHO. 61-98 ECHO. Okay, and go through that. Okay, so let's now work up an IPC that would work, because that's going to take us to the end of the show by the time we get that done. So hopefully, things that I sort of want to recap on, just for a second. I think I want to talk about the IPC, the regulatory requirement, which is 6157 D and E. So D was how you stay current, and E is if you messed up or you were too late, then IPC is required and the requirements for that. And that regulation points you to the ACS, and it points you to the regulation that says that the ACSs have the force of law. And then you go to the ACS, which is the Instrument Rating Airplane ACS. And you go to the appendix, and in the appendix, you'll find the requirements for an IPC. Okay, moving forward. Now, by the way, we're getting close to this wings credit thing, okay? So if you want wings credit for this show, this lecture, this teaching moment, then you need to go to the chat. And in a moment, there'll be a link in there for wings credit. It's the only way we're going to give you wings credit. We're not going to do it if you put something in the chat or if you send us an email. It's probably not going to happen. We don't get much of that really. We used to before, but because there's so many people that want wings credit, like usually over 200. Just imagine if someone has to go through the chat, copy paste, and then get it right. Then I didn't get my wings. If I just put a link in there that you go to and you put your own name in there and you put your own email in there, then that's on you, right? And you'll make sure it's done right. Especially if you've got one of those weird emails, right? Got some special character in or some weird thing, you know, that's ampersand. What the hell is that? Asterisk. It's something, I don't know. But anyway, if you put it in there and you click onto the link, then it will collect your data, and it will have, it's two little boxes in there. You have to say we can collect it because we need to use it. So then that goes to the FAA's SPAN system, and that gets credited to your wings account. Okay, so that's the only way you can get it. All right, got that out of the way, didn't we? I think I said it enough times. Okay, make sure, right? We get that a lot. Like, I didn't get wings credit. All right. How do I get wings credit? I'm telling you right now how to do it. I'm going to tell you one more time, too, at the very end of the show. All right. So then moving on past the the regulatory requirements, and now we have the ACS. We talked about the idea that the ACS uses the word evaluator, and it extends that word usage to an instrument flight instructor, a CFII, when they're conducting an IPC. So you are then considered an evaluator. And if you look at what the evaluator has to do, you have to hold that person, that pilot, to the ACS standard. So in order for the IPC to be finished, every task that's required has to be completed within the ACS standards. Okay, so that's on you to do that. But then what's not clear is that when they use the word evaluator, the evaluator shall pick one knowledge area element and one risk management, all the skills area, for a practical test. If they say that, then that's for a practical test. An IPC is not a practical test. It's not even a test. It's an evaluation, right, to the standard. So, but where the ACS does not use evaluator and practical test together, when an evaluator is performing a practical test or during a practical test, the evaluator will, those kind of things. When they're not saying that, they're just saying the evaluator does this. The evaluation shall include. Then I think that includes you. So when you look at the non-precision approach in Air Reparation 6 Task B, you look at that whole thing, and it doesn't say how many of these approaches that you have to do. So you might think, oh, one will do. But it directs you in the notes, the very top of that task, Air Reparation 6 Task B, it says, click here. And you go there, and it brings you the appendix. And the first place it brings you to is the equipment and airplanes required for the approach. And some people will just say, oh, that's, I already know that. I know I have to bring an airplane. Okay, I can use flight training device. They don't keep scrolling. And if you keep scrolling down, you'll see they define what a precision approach is and what a non-precision approach is. And they say that you need to do two. They don't say on a practical test. They say you need to do two of them. They didn't use the word practical test. And then they say you have to do one without the use of radar vectors. It's got to include a procedure turn. It's got to be from initial approach fix. You have to do one using backup instruments and one without the use of autopilot. So you look at that and you go, how am I going to get all this to work? Because it's kind of unfair to lump unrealistic failures together. For example, it wouldn't be fair to have someone have an autopilot, or let's say a partial panel autopilot, if that system didn't work that way. So basically, if you had backup instruments and your autopilot would have naturally failed, you shouldn't combine the task of using the autopilot on that test, because it's just not a fair thing to do, right? I don't know if I made that clear enough, but in general, what I'm getting at is it may take more than two approaches to give the applicant not all these heaped failures all at the same time, right? To sort of break these things out and say, okay, this one is going to be a non-radar vectored approach. You can use everything you want. It's going to have a procedure turn in it. You can use all of it. The next one is not going to have the autopilot, and it's going to be a partial panel approach, okay? That's fine, because your autopilot may or may not work, and you may, on the heading especially, so you don't know. So that would be a failure that you wouldn't want to combine, those two things. So you say, so we won't use the autopilot for that. That'll ring the bell for the other thing, right? So I think you're getting to what I'm talking about. So I'm going to work an example with you. And this is from the San Francisco Bay Area. And it would be departing any one of the Bay Area airports, anyone will do, San Carlos, Palo Alto, even the East Bay, Hayward, although you may be quicker to do somewhere else. But Reed Hillview, San Jose, any of those airfields, South County, any of these would work, right? Salinas even would work. So and Watsonville. So let's talk about that. So this is going to be a first. We're going to file an IFR flight plan, and we're going to follow the instructions from ATC for a while. Now, we can do this under IFR, but some of it gets trickier because we may not be able to get what we want. So, sometimes ATC is not interested in giving you something because it's IFR. They say, we're going to do a whole thing. And if you had to do the ILS, for example, at Salinas, you'd be going 20-some miles south to be able to get on it. So it'd take a while to do that. And then that might be really just an inefficient way to test someone's ability to fly an ILS, right? The fact they can fly en route for another 20 miles, does that really mean anything when you've already tested that? No. So what I've done here in these next few slides is I've worked up this profile that will, and I've indicated on it the actual procedure. So I show you the approach chart, and I show you what areas of operation that we're covering. So what we can do when you develop your IPC on your plan of action, you're going to create a similar scenario where you are, and you're going to have the ACS out, and you're going to say, okay, when I've done this, which of these area of operations and tasks have I covered fully? And you read what you have to do. You read the appendix. You read all that. Then you say, okay, that would have rung the bell for this, this, this one. And whatever's left is like a one-off thing to do, if there's anything left. That's a one-off thing. And we might be able to do that in the sim even. Could be something, well, we'll just do that in the sim because it's a problem. Like, I can't get this one approach today. The ATC is not authorizing it. They don't want it. Or they're doing something that we don't like. So then we could say, well, okay, that's fine. That's a one-off thing. We'll just do that in the sim, right? Something like that. So let's move on and let's give you a worked example, okay? So we'll start. We've got about 10 minutes left, and then we're going to go into the second hour. The second hour will be a moderated open mic. Now, if I'm around, if I'm truly in Buckeye and I've got a good Phoenix area and I've got a good internet connection, I'm going to do it. And then, but if not, that means I go through the chats and answer them all. I'm sure there's a lot of them now, and there's probably, my guess is, between 200 and 400 or 500 of you in this room. And then typically in the second hour, about 100 and 200 stay, because, you know, you want to get the answers. And if you have a question, you know, you kind of want to get it in there, right? And also don't forget to save the chat. So save the chat by, if there's three little dots on your chat window, if you're using a Mac, I don't know what it is with Windows, but it's three little dots and you can click that and you can save the chat. So it's particularly near the end of the show because people comment, they say things, they have, oh, here's a link to this, this will clarify this, or here's this thing, or whatever it is. Here's my IPC. Could be someone puts in one they've done. Could be that rings the bell for it all. Okay, so save the chat if you can. Right now, let's move on past. This is the scenario. We're going to go from Palo Alto Airport to Salinas, KSNS, all in San Francisco Bay Area, Central California, and a little bit of Central Salinas. Watsonville, KWVI, and then back to KPAO, Papa Alpha Oscar. Okay, so that we want to do is we're going to do an IFR flight plan to begin with so that I can evaluate the student's ability to file an IFR flight plan, receive a clearance, copy the clearance, and get underway. Now, how long I keep the IFR flight plan depends, number one, on the weather, my mood, how much time we really expect to go. And if the student like wants to stay under IFR for most of the time, I'm probably going to be okay with that. Because why not give them extra practice in the system? It's not my flight, it's their flight. So, I mean, I have to evaluate it, but if they're paying me and we can get it all done in the amount of time that we agreed to, then, you know, why not, is what I say. Okay, so let's look at this. So then I expect them to get the full IFR clearance from air traffic control, file it, and then get it, and then repeat it back, and then do it, right? That's the first part. So we've got that to do. And then this first approach we're going to do is the ILS runway 31 to Salinas, way down there. If you look, there's a DME arc on it. So I could get the arc in if we went that far down. But look, it's pretty far. It's like 18 miles. It's a long way down here. So typically, if I were doing this on my own, I would ask ATC for the ILS 31 on my own navigation. And I would say, you know, under VFR, in VFR conditions. And I would keep them at about 2,000 feet along the Silo Valley here, and I would just vector them and turn them on. That's what I would do. But if I wanted to get the arc in, or they want extra practice, that's fine. We could do that. And when I conduct this first approach, it's the precision approach. That's area of operation, I should say 6, not 8, 6 here. Task A. This is area of operation 8, task A. It's correct. I'm also checking the instruments and equipment. So I would have done that leaving Palo Alto Airport, having the student seeing that pilot is checking that all the instruments are working correctly before we take off into IFR conditions, like the attitude indicator is not listing, that it's the heading indicator is turning with the airplane, slip skid indicator is working correctly, the rate, turn indicator is working correctly. It would probably be a turn coordinator. Slip skid indicator working correctly. Standard rate turns are being correctly displayed, like on the G1000 or not, right? There's basic things like that. I check there's fluid in the compass, check that the instruments work. There's been a current VOR test if we're going to use the VOR, which we are probably on this one. And then we move past it, right? So we've got that done. Then we're going to do Evaporation 6 Task A, which is the precision approach. And we're going to combine that with the missed approach. So at the end, remember it said we could land off the approach or we could miss it. So we're going to miss it on this one, which means there's going to be most likely a hold to do or not. And you'll see there's going to be or not here. But that's what we're going to do first. All right, so that's how I rang the bell for that. Then the second thing we're going to do is this thing. It's going to be a non-precision approach. So it's going to be the first of some, Area of Operation 6 Task B, non-precision approach. It's going to include a procedure turn, and it's going to be non-vectored, right? And it's going to be at initial approach fix, right? So that's going to happen. So that would be here from Salinas. And so I would put them over the Salinas VOR, and or the controller would, but I would probably do it myself and say cross Salinas at 3,300, you're cleared for the VOR 1.13 into Salinas, and coordinate all that. You could also ask the approach controller, you'd like to start the approach from Salinas VOR, a non-vectored approach, and they would do that, right? And so that would take care of the non-precision approach, procedure turn, non-vectored, and then we'd have a missed approach off of that. And you can see the missed approach goes off into a hold, and we could cover then Air Operation 3 Task B, get that one done, holding procedures. So that would ring the bell for that. But you see, I still need to do a non-precision approach that uses backup instruments. And I don't think it's a fair shake, really, to give to put all that onto one approach, right? So this one I'm letting use the autopilot. It's fine. I can it can display how they can use an autopilot on precision and a non-precision approach. That helps me evaluate, make sure nothing's going wrong here and everything's all that the autopilot uses is right on it, right? And they're not just a participant in the flight. They're part of the flight. They're part of that feedback loop. So there's that. And then I do another one. I'm going to do one more. It's going to be this one. So this is going to be VOR Alpha, circle to land at Watsonville. And this is a very nice, unique one, I have to say. So because it has an arc on it, number one, well, that's good. And I remember I'm missing, so I'm over here, right in this area where the missed approach is, the hold. And I can just ask for radar vectors to the arc from here. And then, or I can do it myself because this is Class E and G airspace out this way. And I can either put them on the arc or they can get vectored onto the arc. They're cleared for the approach. They do that. And now we're doing this partial panel probably when we get here. We'll probably let them have the arc, right? And then go partial panel from here, right? And then no autopilot. And so that rings the bell then for Air Operations 5, Task A, DME arcs. It also gives us Air Operation 6 Task B, the other non-precision approach, that so we're not rushing the student. And it gives us Air Operation 7 Task D, which is the approach with the loss of primary flight instruments, or indicators, right? So that's either six-pack heading indicator, attitude indicator, and then for the Garmin, it would be the, or the G1000, it would be reversionary mode. Unfortunately, I really like doing that in the sim. I would really, if I had a simulator, I would do this in the sim for sure. Okay, and then no autopilot. And we're also going to be able to circle here because, interesting, if you look at this runway structure that Watsonville has here, you're coming in on this track right where that arrow's at. The fair weather runway for Watsonville Airport's runway 20 right here. So this one just happens to put us right on the 45 for left pattern, which is left traffic, runway 20 at Watsonville. So it's perfect, right? It gets us right into where we want to go, and then we don't have to cross the other side of the field or anything weird. We're already circling on the right side already, along with the VFR traffic. So that's pretty good, right? Not bad already. So that takes care of that one. And then we're going to go back to Palo Alto, right? And on the way back, we're going to recover from unusual attitude. And we can do another non-precision approach if we want to. That can be, we don't have to, but it gives us a possibility of circling to land again if we didn't get it in here. If for some reason we got down here, we really just couldn't get the circle in because the pattern too busy, saturated, it would be dangerous, or we couldn't see, whatever the case is, then we can still get the circle back in at Palo Alto. So this is using the LNAV approach, which is to runway 31, which is here. So we take that all the way down to the missed approach point, and you'll see what our altitude is there on this approach. It's approximately 460 feet. Circling is 460 there. So we're going to go a little lower than pattern altitude, but we could maybe modify that. We'll talk about that. There's nothing in that says you got to, well, that's a bone of contention. But anyway, we'll talk about that another day. But the idea is that we could ask for overhead, right overhead break over the numbers, and we come right across the circle all the way back to 30, and we have it in. So, by the way, when we do IPCs for the instructors where we are, we're usually supercurrent IFR, so we do everything in the sim, but you can't circle, right? So then we go out to the airplane, we do this approach into Palo Alto with the right overhand brake. Unless you're using 1-3, then we can do the other, and come back around, and we're done. Call it done. Okay, and that checks the equipment, also instruments on the taxi back, make sure that's done. And that kind of, you know, does it for us. And so Now we've got a full IPC in the bag that rings all the bells, right? That's got all everything answered. And whether or not, you know, when we get our final ruling, it's not a legal interpretation, so it's just going to be something from the AC. I asked them basically, why do you make an AC that has all this stuff in it that's not required? And you don't point out that it's not required. You're not saying this is optional, this is recommended, and this is absolutely for sure. And then what about those two approaches? And what about the use of radar? Where's all that? That's in the ACS. Yes, it's in the ACS, but it's not clear. Then because it used the word evaluator, that's what got the whole thing going. Is we have to do that, so we can't just go out and make it up on our own. We're not just go just non-precision approach, precision approach, and hold, and we'll be done. No, the ACS and the FAR require you to do those tasks. Okay. So that's what I have to say. So then the next question is, now I'm going to learn all this stuff. This should look different by the time you get it. Should go to our website. Well, the first thing, take our CFII course. Second thing is come to our 3-day CFII sit-down in-person class, right? You can do that even without taking the online course because this stuff is pretty straightforward. And there's also in this document, endorsements and scenarios, there's two or three instrument rating scenarios that are now part of it. So the IPC is one of them as well. Okay, and then there'll be other links. Now, again, Wings credit, you've got to go to the chat. Now would be a good idea. Go get the Wings credit, and then when you're finished with that, you click onto it and put in your name, your email, and then you'll get Wings credit here in a few days. It doesn't take that long to do it that way. If you put it in the chat, I'm not going to do anything with it. Now, Redbird did release their state of flight training survey. And this was the general idea how much things cost. So that's, again, it's part of this presentation. You'll have it. I won't take it out. So this is instrument rating is about $12,000 right now. They don't cover the CFII, but CFII should run you between $3,000 and $5,000 in this region, right? Depending on, and the thing to do is come in instrument strong, not just current, not just meeting the minimums like you did. I got current by doing the ILS 6 times. That's not the kind of currency I'm talking about. Okay, that's it. I'm going to close out here and we'll start the second hour. So